This is Whitley Strieber with the first in our UFO Investigator series. We're exploring the wonderful and remarkable world of people who are open-minded enough to try to make something out of the UFO phenomenon. And among those people, some of them will be famous, like Stanton Friedman. Others, not so well-known, but nevertheless extraordinarily interesting. And one of those is with us tonight to lead off this series, Paul Potter from Brisbane, Australia, is on the line. And Paul has a remarkable website called UFOphysics.com. That's UFOphysics.com. And you really won't find another one like it in the world. It's that unusual. UFOphysics.com. And Paul, I hope I'm not going to blow your budget, bandwidth budget, by mentioning this, your website, but it's quite a wonderful site. And we're going to get into some of the remarkable things on this website, among them translations of many of the things that Betty Andreasen Lucas said after her abductions under hypnosis by Raymond Fowler over the years. And when I say translations, what I mean is Betty often speaks in what used to be, we used to think, were star languages, until it was discovered, as I reported in my book Transformation, that at least one of those languages was Celtic, of all things. And we even published some haunting translations of those statements. And Paul has discovered that many of the other supposedly star language statements are actually sometimes obscure, sometimes common, and sometimes ancient and obscure languages. But Paul, before we get to that, I'd like to talk a little bit about Paul Potter, the person, and why it is that you're interested in this subject, so much interested in it, that you would go to this much trouble and effort.
Interesting question. I guess with abductees, you arrive at a certain point in your life where something clicks, and you just get on with what you need to get on with.
Right. Now, let me ask you this. You say abductees, and that's a big word, and you are an abductee.
Right.
When did you find that out?
Only recently, only about 2 years ago.
Well, tell me a little bit about what happened.
I read the book called The Threat by David Jacobs.
Yes.
And,
sure, I know the book. Tell me a little bit about the impressions. What was it in the book that made you realize this had happened to you?
Well, very specifically, it was the description that other abductees had given him of the mind scan.
Tell us about the mind scan.
Well, this happened to me when I was 9 years old. And at the time, it was just a series over many weeks of horrendous nightmares of visions in your mind that you just could not explain, and you couldn't find you couldn't rationalize.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting images of hairs and something passing through hairs, very compressed hairs. Lines and things like that.
Oh, very lines that looked like very magnified hairs.
Mm, yeah.
I see. The very unusual image to come out of nowhere.
Exactly the same image you get of the high resolution or high magnification pictures of lines and things like that in, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. These would alternate with images of huge space, huge areas of nothing.
Just vast nothingness, or was it enclosed in any way? Or
no, it was just vast.
And you had you so these must have been very private images for you. They're so unusual that you wouldn't have seen any reference to them anywhere.
Not necessarily private, it was just, you just couldn't explain it to anybody. And I think at the time you have an attachment of fear at the same time, and you just you obviously can't look at the whole picture.
Yes.
Because your mind just shuts it out. It shuts out the dangerous.
And something in Dave Jacobs' book made you think these images might involve abductions. What was it in the book specifically?
Well, basically, the mind scan was the ET being, whether it was an elder or a grey,
mm-hmm.
he was actually looking through your eyes and then actually traveling through your neural pathways in your mind.
And as another living being inside you.
Yeah,
which is
where the compressed hair comes from. It felt like someone was actually going through your neural pathways inside your head.
So that must have been incredibly disturbing.
When you're 8 or 9 years old, yes, it is.
Well, yes. Did you ask your parents about it?
I think I screamed at my parents at the time and tried to understand what was going on. But yeah, I mean,
this happened rather suddenly, or was it over a series of nights, or?
Yeah, this period was reoccurring over many nights.
Mm-hmm. Were there any UFO sightings in the area?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, in those days, I mean, we're talking back in the late 50s.
Yes.
I mean, UFOs were just not a subject.
No.
And certainly aliens weren't a subject.
It's hard to believe there's somebody still as old as I am. If you were 8 or 9 in the late 50s, you're only a few years younger than me. So then you sort of filed this away. Were there any other incidents later on in your life?
Well, yes. I would have what would be termed vivid dreams.
Mm-hmm. Vivid.
Now, to me, I mean, you know, you can explain this to other people and they think, oh, it's just a dream. But then I can differentiate between a vivid dream and some sort of ordinary dream. One of the vivid dreams was it ended up standing underneath a UFO, and it was a square UFO, which is unusual.
Yeah.
And as it was above me, its hatch was closing, and then it moved off. And at the time, in the dream or later on, I thought to myself, well, they haven't harmed me, so I must be okay.
You know, it's very interesting that you say a square UFO, because I have very vivid memories of square UFOs that I have never mentioned to anybody until this moment. Interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's fascinating. That's the way this thing goes, you know, these threads, and it sort of started out with the images of threads as our hairs kind of linking together, and that's what's happening between you and me, I think. You know, you sent me a letter to my website, and it had a link to your website and some interesting things about Betty on it, and I was absolutely fascinated, and now here we are, and it turns out we're linked in other ways as well by an unusual image that, in my case, it's extremely vivid, and I'll say exactly what it is. I'm at a house in our old summer house that we no longer have. When I was a child, my father and mother had a summer house along with my grandparents north of San Antonio, about 50 miles. And I was there with my father in this dream, very vivid dream memory, and we were standing out on the front walk, and these square, or I should say rectangular, you know, box-shaped UFOs come tumbling over the house, glowing brightly, and go down into the flat back pasture behind the house, and there's a lot of glowing coming from down there, and I am very eager to go down there, and my father says, not yet. And then a pair of lights comes up the road very much faster than car lights could come, and they stop, and at that moment I get scared, and that's the end of the memory. But it's square UFOs too.
Thank you for telling me that.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's now turn to...
Can I, before we...
Oh, please, please do.
The one thing that was even more unusual about the square UFO was that when I looked at the shell, it wasn't metal. It had a vibrance. It was almost as if it didn't have a hard surface. It was a vibrating surface. And it was almost like molecular vibrance.
Was it glowing or not?
No, it wasn't glowing. No.
Like a living being, maybe, are you saying? Skin?
No, I wouldn't say that. I think it's just that we haven't got the understanding of... we haven't got sufficient understanding of physics to know what it is.
To know what it is.
Right. Yeah. One other thing, in the same era, in more or less the same dream, what a vivid dream, was that the aliens were showing me a future scenario, and they were getting me to look at a distant view of a city, and there was a red glow coming over the city.
Yeah.
And they said to me, "You'll be okay. You won't be harmed." And I mean, obviously, there's more abductions that I've gone through, but that was basically that scenario.
Right. Okay, so let's now get on to your interest in Betty Luka. How did you become interested in Betty?
Well, the whole abduction thing and the UFO thing and the alien thing is connected to strange events, and that was one for me. I was in the Bodhi Tree bookshop in Los Angeles.
Yes.
And I was researching King Arthur and early Christianity at the time. And I went into this bookshop, and then suddenly, for no reason, I picked up this UFO book, and it was The Andreessen Affair by Betty Andreessen.
By Raymond Fowler, actually.
Fowler, yeah, right.
Yeah.
And I opened the page to one of the illustrations that showed a sort of a funnel shaped with four sets of spheres. These crystal spheres.
Yes.
And I looked at it and I thought, that's interesting. Put the book down, carried on with what I was doing, and it just sort of stuck in my mind that someday I need to look at that again.
And so you bought the book? Or?
Well, eventually, I think something like 8 years later, I came back to England, and I thought, well, I have to find that book. And so,
8 years later, and you still hadn't forgotten it.
Right? Yeah.
Well, you know, that, so, talk about a hard sell. Ray would be happy to know that you finally did buy it.
Yeah. Once I bought that book, and I just had to get the whole series, and that's what started me off. It was mainly the thought that a vortex could induce a lot more energy, electrical energy.
Yes. Well, you know something very interesting about vortexes. We've had in the States recently a lot of tornadoes, and there is some evidence that there are objects that appear right around the tornadoes, little discrete objects like plasmas that are connected with the high energy vortex, because there's an electromagnetic vortex associated with a tornado as well.
Yeah.
And you know, on your website, the material about gravitation and gravity ships and so forth is so beautifully worked out. I am looking on the homepage, and I look at the gravity manipulation part, and it's among the very best and very most interestingly studies of the Andreessen ship and so forth that I've ever seen. It's just wonderful, and I want to congratulate you for it.
Thank you.
And listeners, goodness, if you go to this site, which I'm sure you will, you should not miss that particular part of it. It's very, very fascinating. Let's talk a little bit about the ship and how you think it works.
Yes. Well, actually, the website is the product of about 4 years of research and change and more change. And as I say on the website, it's a developing project. And basically what happened in the first place was I put forward my theory of how the Andreasen UFO worked, and
right.
readers of the site would come to me and say, oh, well, I think you've got this a little bit wrong here, and may I suggest blah, blah, blah. And so it's developed over the years, and I mean, it's probably not exactly how the thing works, but it's I think of it as a foundation for scientific research and development. And I think it's obviously can be improved, and why I do the graphics the way I do is just it helps so much to see something that is alien.
Oh, they're beautifully rendered graphics.
Thank you.
Yeah, indeed. I know how those are hard to render. It's a challenge.
Well, you know, I try to make it as interesting as possible.
Yes.
Mainly to get feedback.
Now, what about, you mentioned a high energy particles in the, I'm looking at it right now. Negatively charged particles are thrust downward at great velocity, and the ship itself is surrounded by a magnetic field. Is that thrust, what makes it, what defeats gravity? Or can you explain it? Do you really know that much?
Well, yeah, because actually my web page stops there, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sort of does. I was just curious as to whether or not you actually have an idea of what it might be that makes it work. Because understand, listeners, he hasn't solved the problem of gravity, and it would be unfair of me to imply that he had. But what he has done here is to very carefully render the spacecraft as Betty has described it, and to illustrate the way it would look as designed, and the way the various mechanisms that she describes might look and might function. But it's not, unfortunately, this is not the smoking gun. We can't go to this website and get an anti-gravity machine out of it. But you sure can get a lot of fascinating ideas.
Absolutely. yeah, I'm waiting for the next professor and physicist to come along and make a good suggestion.
Have many physicists and professors done that?
A few. Yeah, I get the odd email saying, where did you learn your physics?
Uh-huh.
But then, you know, the problem with physicists is, you know, that they're trained in earthly physics.
Right.
And I think you have to look at very, very radical ideas. But I've had electronic engineers come to me and suggest, make suggestions about the magnetic field. The beauty of the current theory that I put up is that you've got a huge magnetic field
right.
Surrounding the ship in a very large volume. And what I'm saying is that field oscillates. It gets generated and then it shuts down. And when it shuts down, when it collapses, all the electrical energy in that magnetic field is compressed to a very, very small space, which makes that electric charge very powerful.
Right. You know, very interestingly, at the end, the very last thing on this page is about alternating magnetic fields. And what fascinated me about that was that when I was a boy, I had quite an experience with this business, and I was shown how to build an anti-gravity engine.
Right.
It consisted of a donut-shaped electromagnet with another electromagnet in it that was sort of like a fist-shaped or a round one. And quite to my amazement, between myself and a friend of mine, we were both about 12, we found two such electromagnets, and we put one inside the other in my room and plugged them both in at the same time, with the result that after about 40 seconds, the house blew out, the electricity in the house blew out. Then that night, I had a feeling that I was in trouble. The lights in the house started oscillating, and there was a strange sound overhead, and I was afraid that the aliens had showed up and that they were after me for fooling with this engine and for doing this. And
secrets
then,
of the universe.
What?
Telling everybody the secrets of the universe.
Well, monkeying around with things I wasn't supposed to play with, because... And then the next afternoon, the house burned down entirely. The roof burned off.
Right.
And I wasn't there at the time. I've always been glad I was actually far away. I was miles away from the house. And there was no way that my parents could connect the fire with me, as they certainly would have done had I been there. Whether they could prove it or not, they would have assumed that I was the responsible party somehow.
Okay.
So, you know, so and that was involving alternating magnetic fields. So there's something here, and it's absolutely fascinating. But I want to go on, because really, to me, the absolute heart of your research has been the translation of the star language and of the different languages that and the message of these languages. Because I think we're all aware of the fact that the sun is not operating normally.
Right.
Our science is not warning us about a nova, by the way. In fact, we are far, far, many, many millions of years from any sign of a nova on our sun, according to what we understand.
Right.
But the sun is acting in an unusual manner. Just the past few days, one of the largest sunspots ever seen passed across the surface of the sun. And now this is in year 13 of the 11-year solar cycle. So we should be going into a period of quiet sun now, but the sun remains as active as it was at the height of the cycle. Very unusual, unprecedented as far as we know in studies of the sun. So let's get into a little bit of this message. And why don't we just start at the by clicking on the sun's nova section of the site, and tell us a little bit about how you came to realize that these words that everyone always dismissed as or assumed were untranslatable star language were actually translatable.
Just before they were translated, I'd decided to run them through all the computer programs I could find, all the different languages.
Yeah.
Because I looked at the words and I thought they were Mexican Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ran them through Latin eventually, and I got this page of a few words that were understandable, and the rest gobbledygook.
Right.
But it was sufficient to say to me, well, okay, maybe we should find a few more Latin dictionaries and just compare all the words, because obviously the words are phonetic.
Yes.
When they were transcribed by Betty, they were phonetic, so the spelling is not going to be exactly the same as, you'd find in a dictionary or a book.
But they're so enigmatic. This first one, for example, Nocondo emisato dolmeo castal atra igniatro erito corsenita egrando adani Christos colustra endra egracia calisto bonasa siala. That is what she said. Now listen, listen, folks, to this in Latin. Nos ens emissio doleo meo calara ignius edito cursus eniteo egrandio Adonai Christos colustro endo e gratia caelus bonus sial. They're practically word for word in Latin.
Yeah.
Why don't you, are you on the page now?
Yeah.
Well, read us now the translation of this, because it's so, so haunting, really.
The translation is, the illuminous Christ, Lord of righteous, gracious heaven proclaims, calls out, seal the increasing flow of harmful burning beams, rapidly discharging painful suffering.
Now, this was done in 1978.
Yeah.
Now, the next one, Nolo Nolo Santia Adonai Christo Siala Siala. In Latin, it becomes Nolo Nolo Sancte Sanctitas Adonai Ac Christos Scalare Scalare. You refuse to appreciate the sacredness of the Lord and Christ. Miscreants, or evil ones.
Yeah. Actually,
how do you react to these?
Well, I mean, I think you're pretty well prepared, because once you've read the Betty Luca books, the aliens have been warning her that they're not very pleased with the people on Earth, the way they want to fight wars, and the disturbing destruction that they're doing to their own planet. So they really are telling us now that we don't have much choice but to sort it out.
Yeah, and they really, and do you think they're telling us there is something more fundamental wrong with the sun than our scientists are saying? Because they certainly seem to be.
Absolutely. Funny enough, this thing about the sun being unstable is actually coming through the people who are into psychic messages and
yes.
Spiritual messages.
But this one, Sola Rostra Eglastia Condosa, could not be more clear. Solar Oster Ecclesia Conducto is people, repair your sun star.
Yeah.
Solar Oster, sun star.
Yeah.
Can
it
we?
Is? Sorry?
Can we?
That's the big question. They're not saying that there is something wrong with our sun, or shall I say, they're not merely saying that there's something wrong with our sun. They're saying, look, you guys, you're going to have to take responsibility for your sun.
Yes.
Otherwise you're going to be in trouble.
You know, one of the most remarkable abductees that I know is a woman. She was our secretary for a number of years, and she's had some very, very extraordinary experiences. We met her because she sent us a letter back in the old days, and she happened to live, surprisingly enough, within sight of right around the corner from us. And she didn't know where we lived at all. So we became friends, and her name is Laurie Barnes, and she will be on this program describing some of her life and experiences soon. The thing is that the main being that she knew and interacted with called himself Soltec, and said that he was a scientist whose job was to work on and understand the sun.
Right.
So
interesting.
Exactly. It's very interesting the way these threads kind of come and keep coming and linking together. As soon as you said threads at the beginning of the conversation, I thought that would be kind of the theme of this, and I had a feeling there'd be a lot of threads here, and there are.
But that's the way I understand this whole abduction item is working. It's not one person that's going to change things. It's a network of people who do thread together.
That's right. I agree.
And and the whole thing is intercommunication, getting together.
Now, there is another, the next quote in here is really, really, really rich, and it's rich on a whole lot of different levels. Go ahead and read it. It's the one that starts, "Take heed before the cuts in the serpent's ring." Go ahead and read just the... There's no point in our reading out the Latin. It's too long.
Oh, yeah, right. 1:14:1.
Yeah.
"Take heed before the cuts in the serpent's ring, the red glowing, bristly, swelling waves of the tri-star take away hardened mankind and woman within the sun's nova wall at the sun's destructive transformation. The sun star beckons to mankind to flee away, or mankind's home will be laid to waste. Put together the illuminating sun star, seal inside the beta radiation that is flowing from it, or pay the price."
Or pay the price. And it's so hard to understand what it's about unless you think of the sun as a living being of some kind that is aware of us and is reacting to our presence in some way.
Yeah.
And this, of course, takes us back to to some of the very ancient religions, to the religion of Akhenaten, for example. And in my case, to a very, very early childhood experience. I was about 3. And I had the following moment occurred. I walked into our living room. I was a very little boy, because I'm visualizing this in memory as I talk. There's light streaming in one of the windows, beautiful sunlight coming in and there's dust motes blowing in slowly through the shaft of light. It's a lovely, lovely morning. I don't know what time of year. And the light of the sun is speaking to me.
Yeah.
And it's something I've always heard and always known about. But at this moment, I suddenly become aware that this is unusual to hear the sun speaking. And that moment I remember, because I have never again heard the voice of the sun. Until
right.
I think I opened this and began to read it. This is, to me, it sounds like the voice of the sun that I remember from my babyhood.
Right. Crying for help.
Yes. Crying for help. And yet, and there's the repeated reference in this to seals reminds me of course, of the Book of Revelation and the possible meaning for this particular age when we have what's happening right now. And the reason we're talking, I was riveted, obviously, but when I began to read this, for the following reason: the sun is very uneasy. There's no evidence of a nova coming that we know of, as we understand it. But there's another thing happening, and that is the Earth's magnetic field has gotten, according to an article in the London Sunday Times on January the 13th of this year, there are holes in the magnetic field of the Earth, and the magnetic pole is in motion. Every evidence is emerging that the Earth's magnetic field, not the planetary body, but the magnetic field is going to flip polarity. They don't know enough about it to know if this is going to happen tomorrow or if it's going to happen in 10,000 years, but it's certainly going to happen geologically soon. They also don't know if the Earth's magnetic field collapses for a period of time, and if that does happen, if that is part of it, then these hurting rays that it refers to in these statements will reach the surface of the Earth, and it will be a very hard place to live for a while. So this isn't so far from reality. this is a these things what people like Betty are saying, especially Betty, more than any of the other abductees, including me, are saying has a meaning on a level that we are hardly conscious of. And it's hard to understand these words because this is language as it is spoken in the superconscious world of sort of the higher mind, I think. Go to the next one. Go to 114.2a and read that one for us. Take heed against
Take heed against the sun, stars, nova of exploding waves, against the opposite outer crust, the destructive transformation of the sun's swelling waves and its megastrikes wall that will lay waste seven. Seal the celestial void, the gaping, seeping, anti-magnetic particles finding their way in. Gobbles light rays which store energy and give life. Burns.
Now, of course, this, in my mind, brings up the idea of the seventh seal in the book of Revelations. It's almost like it's another way of looking at the Revelation, which is a book of about a kind of burning. It's a book about fire. How do you react to all of this?
Well, it's interesting in that we're talking about transformation.
Yes.
And I think in one of Betty's books, the aliens are talking to her. Quasgar, I think his name was. And they're saying the way people on Earth look at things like fire is totally different to the way the aliens look at it. They look at fire and what happens with burning as not as something that starts and ends. They're looking at it's a transformation from one thing to another. And I think that's what this sun's nova is all about. It's a story about transformation. It's not the end. It's just a transformation to another situation.
Another level. Now, there's down at 114.2b, there's an absolutely fascinating one. I will read it. Sun and mankind will collide from the... And again, this is suggests a relationship between us and the sun where it is not necessarily an inanimate object. Will collide from the triple-changing celloids within the sun star, those abiding inside the umbra of nothing, before the sleeping coiled serpent's great gossamer web of beta radiation will be preserved. Now, inside the umbra of nothing, I was fascinated earlier in the interview, I knew we would get to this point, where you spoke of this nothingness that you had been... that you had dreamed of being in, and you had seen which book was it that you were talking about? I don't remember which book that appears in. It was one of the things that convinced you had had abductions.
Oh, The Threat by David Jacobs.
Oh, Dave Jacobs' book. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the interesting thing. That no thing is something that can be found in a meditative state. It's almost as if saying that people who are able to reach this state will be preserved. And indeed, there is a certain quality of throughout these that the mind will be the refuge for those who want to who wish to be preserved during this time of extraordinary change. And you can read this in a different way. You can say it's not the exploding of the sun, but the enlightenment of the earth that's coming. And this enlightenment will be so agonizing, it's going to drive a lot of people crazy.
Right.
But the way out is to find this meditative center.
Actually, I was reading in one of your books the last couple of days, The Chameleon Letters.
Yes.
And one of the abductees in there, he describes exactly what you're saying right now, in that he traveled to different states, shall we say, than the one we're actually living in now. And I think that's true. I think there are different states, and we're going to go up a gear.
Oh, absolutely. I think we're going into a different state, and I think that if the Earth magnetic field does change, if north becomes south and south becomes north magnetically, I think the mind of man is going to change with it profoundly. And we will come into a new age then, and it may be indeed that the meek do inherit the earth under those circumstances, but with the greatest agony for those to whom the way the world looks and functions now is essential to their meaning and to their being. They will be burned by the sun, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this now, as we have, where are you going from here? You're on quite a journey, and what's the next, what are you working on right now, for example?
Well, with my work, usually what happens is I do a project, and I tend to get guided by someone, some spiritual being or alien or whatever. And once I finish that project, I usually have a period when I'm doing absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm more or less doing now. I've finished the website. It's just been revised again. And I'm coming up to an end where, you know, obviously I've done the translation, and I'm basically waiting for the next project to come along.
Now, I'm going to go now to the Bob Lazar section, which also absolutely fascinated me, because, you know, what's wonderful about this is these very, very, very carefully drawn renderings of the devices that these people have described. And tell me a little bit about what you think about Bob Lazar.
Yeah, poor old Bob Lazar. I think he basically may have been set up in the first place by being invited to work at Area 51.
Uh-huh.
But nevertheless, you know, he obviously worked at a top secret base, and he tried to clear his conscience, tell people, and he got attacked for it. And now I think he's being very self-protective about his information.
Yes, he is.
If you go to the Bob Lazar website nowadays, you have to actually pay to get in. Whereas I think 4 years ago when I first reached his site, it was all free and I could look at the pictures. What I don't want to do with the Bob Lazar information is to present his pictures on my website, because obviously there's copyright, and I don't think it's fair anyway. So why I've rendered the pictures my way is obviously to save his copyright.
Yeah, but at the same time, you've rendered them your way very beautifully, and it's an expert job.
Thank you.
Of course, the economics of websites are pretty frightening. I mean, this website, my website, unknowncountry.com, costs a little over $10,000 a month to run.
Woo!
Yeah, and that does not include any of my time or my wife Ann's time at all.
Right.
And some of the people involved in it are paid pitifully, some of the most important people, because the main costs are things like bandwidth. And so we have a subscriber section, too. I can certainly understand Bob's thoughts about that, because I'm sure he was getting many, many hits, and it was hitting him in the pocketbook pretty hard.
Yeah.
Ann and I try to get through a year spending under $30,000 of our own money on this website. And since it costs $120 to $130 a year, we need at least $100,000 from the website to keep it going, and then $30,000 of our own money. Mm-hmm. And so his making his website an all-pay website, I don't blame him, but I wish there was, I always wish there was more money in this field and a better way of doing these things. But there isn't, not now, so this is where we are. Well, listen, it has been really fascinating talking to you, Paul Potter, and from Brisbane, Australia, with a really remarkable and unusual website, an unusual UFO investigator, struggling like the rest of us, rowing upstream toward some kind of certainty somewhere off in the future, or perhaps not. But one thing you have done is you've contributed marvelously to the texture and quality of this great question that fills all of our minds. So
thank you
very much for being with us.
Thank you for talking to me.
His website is ufophysics.com, and if you can't get on it right away while you're listening to this, well, wait a few hours or a few days, because I'm sure a lot of people will be going to take a look, and it will open up again soon. So this is Whitley Strieber. This is for the Dreamland subscriber section, our UFO investigator series.